Resonance Rewind. Phil, there are so many great television shows and movies.
That's right. Thank goodness Resonance Rewind has the team to analyze them on a personal basis.
So in part one of Xanadu the musical, we were desperately waiting to hear what Chloe Rose would make of it after the rest of the team, of course, both Jessica and indeed Kathy Mansour, were very much singing its praises, as indeed was Victoria Simmons from that point of view. Now she has actually watched it. Chloe Rose, welcome to Resonance Rewind, the first two-part Resonance Rewind musical special we've put together, focused on Xanadu. What are your thoughts?
I absolutely loved it. It had a real magic to it. I think it was the fact that it was kind of built on this romance that was created by the daughter of Zeus. Obviously, there's lots of daughters of Zeus, and Kira was one of them. She came right the way down to Earth, basically, and You know, she ended up falling in love with this artist who was absolutely incredible. He was painting projects, and then all of a sudden she was in the back of one of his paintings, and he was thinking, wow, who is this woman? I'm sure she kissed me today. Yeah, this carer lady randomly kissed him, and he thought, oh, who's this woman? Realized it was on the picture that of this project he was creating, and then it was like she was put on there, you know, as a muse to sort of inspire him to join this project with this other musician, and then they create. Anyway, I'm going on too much, but what the point is, I absolutely loved it. That is the point.
Well, it's good to hear that you share, obviously, the views of our previous
Yeah.
hosts with respect to that. Did you feel that the blending of genres, because I mean, clearly the movie's now over 40 years old. At the time, it was very
Yeah.
much mixing and matching rock and roll. I mean, the classic connection between Danny Maguire and Sonny, hey, do you like Glenn Miller? Sonny says, do you like rock and roll? Danny says, I love rock and roll. Sonny says, I love Glenn Miller. Did you feel that actually worked? And is it something which in your own music, sometimes you actually think, well, maybe actually see, do an homage to the big band era, the flower power era, the punk era, and so on.
Yeah, I do think it's something I should consider, because I think when a musician's sort of willing to try different ideas, different contrasts in music, it makes people listen and think, oh, actually, I like that type of music. Oh, Chloe's now going to do some rock and roll. Let's see what that's like. And watching the film, I kind of liked the idea of when they were sort of building this auditorium and they was deciding what they wanted in it, the idea they wanted rock and roll, and then more of a modern twist to it. I liked that idea. And then the fact that roller skating came into the styles of music within it, that there was all dancing with roller skates, and I thought it was really fun. It was random. I must say it was extremely random, you know, how they blended in together the different styles. But to be honest, that made it more the more enjoyable for me anyway.
And I
So
think it
it's
was that,
good to try and think.
it was very much that randomness, which I think a lot of critics at the time, as we said last week or in part one, shall we say, were very bemused by it and actually gave it such a poor rating. Again, it was something which was regarded very much as being not a great movie. In fact, one of the worst movies ever, I think, was tied up. And that line which I used in part one, not so much Xanadu as Xanadon't. Let's talk characters, because clearly.
Oh,
Yeah, it's it. Well, this is
yes.
it. I think the stage play has done slightly better, but lots of characters in there. Although there is the trinity, shall we say, of Danny Maguire, Kira, and Sonny Malone, played by Gene Kelly, Olivia Newton-John, and Michael Beck. We do have a fairly substantive supporting cast, James Sloyan as the boss Simpson, who obviously had his artistic dreams and then decided he wanted to give up on those dreams and effectively follow the financial aspect of that. Plus, of course, the additional eight muses that were actually there. We didn't really find out too much about them, but obviously they
No.
played a clear role in terms of that. And a number of other sort of fine supporting casts as well, such as obviously the team who supported Sonny Malone in his original artistic dreams, Fred McCarran as Richie and so on, Wren Woods as Joe. Who was it who stood out for yourself?
To be honest, I think all like the main cast, I think, you know, Danny, I think Keira, Olivia Newton-John, obviously, and Gene Kelly as oh gosh, I'm trying to think of his
Danny
name now.
Maguire.
Yeah, did I just say Danny? I'm thinking of Sonny, the other character as Sonny. And yeah, Danny, I thought all three of them were brilliant in their own way. They all, you know, brought something fantastic that made it successful. I loved the kind of fact that Danny and Kira, there was that moment where he was like, I recognize you. But it was almost like it was never fully said, was it? But it was almost as like that was him, that was his muse back in the day. But in the end, it's sad but happy that she does end up being able to be with someone that she truly loves in the end. You know, she ends up with Sonny, but she didn't end up with that Danny, did she? I mean, obviously you know, it was a long, long time ago when she was with that Danny. Sorry, I'm just really thinking about it. I really enjoyed it, to be honest.
Well,
But yeah, if I was to pick, I'd say Kira. She's my favourite. That's what the top and bottom of what you were wanting to know, wasn't it? That's my favourite character, Kira. But I liked all of them, to be honest.
I thought you would have actually
Great.
referred positively to one of the lines of dialogue in which the classic line of "Stranger things have happened" being a key sort of follower of that current series, Stranger Things. Of course, arguably, we just simply see a version of Kira, an aspect of that connects with Sully, because we just see that closing sequence where she's clearly one of the waitresses in the club Xanadu, and there is this sense that they might connect, they might not connect, because arguably Kira, the original muse, had the finale of multiple songs, multiple genres, multiple from country and western through to rock and roll onwards, and then that was basically it. And Sonny effectively feels, okay, it's over then. And there is that sense of, loss, but at the same time, rebirth and regeneration that comes around.
It's because I was sad at that point because it was like, oh, she's gone off to the sky or whichever it was, as she flashes off with all the. I love that, the sort of light beam around her all the time, which makes her seem this mythical kind of magical creature. But I was thinking, oh, no, they're not going to end up together. And then, as you said, when she's a waitress at the end, it's like, oh, I actually think this is going to end well. They're going to both get the true love they wanted in the end. And it gave me a real feel good feeling at the end where I was like, oh, I'm happy with that. I can go to bed tonight thinking, oh, that's ended lovely,
We have, of course, Wilfred Hyde White as Zeus, and of course additional partner. I think it's I forget the name of the actress who actually played is the female heavenly voice from that point of view. Which have the debate about, well, maybe just one moment, darling. Well, maybe just one moment or forever. I keep getting them mixed up too, as Zeus actually says from that perspective. Did you feel that kind of worked in terms of did it? I mean, we live in a world in which perhaps we like to see everything proven, and that notion of spirituality and a sense of being inspired. Do you feel that the movie actually addressed that well, or did you feel, I'm not so sure?
I do. I think the idea that, well, in a spiritual way or whatever, that she was sort of sent to the earth to kind of inspire different people over the years. I felt it came through for me. But to be honest with you, I would like to see it redone. Like they've done Star Is Born and they've reworked that with different actors. I think this could be amazing because maybe it didn't turn out right, Xanadu first, but maybe if it's reworked and modernized even more, I actually think there's an audience out there for that. I really do. Maybe now, maybe we're ready for this, Alex. Do you know what I mean? I think new actors, obviously Olivia Newton-John was amazing, but it needs to be modernized so like the new kids on the block can watch it as well. This could be a thing,
Favorite
I
song
think.
from the selection from Electric Light Orchestra and from obviously Olivia Newton-John, which one for you was the highlight? Which one could we anticipate Chloe Rose saying, I quite fancy doing a cover version of that?
To be honest, I liked all of them, but there was that there was a song called Xanadu, wasn't there? Which I'm sure it was called Xanadu, which I actually liked. I mean, that sounds an easy way of getting out of it because it's the title, but I'd have probably gone with the main one. Yes,
So
I'd have gone with just the song Xanadu. I'd have given that a
Xanadu it is
go.
then. Electric Light Orchestra
Absolutely.
and Olivia Newton-John working together for that one. And finally, Chloe, your mark out of 10 for this
Oh.
your first incarnation of Xanadu.
Do you know what? I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I think, yeah, possibly modernized a bit more. Let's rework this. But for me, I'd say a 9. I thought it was really good. I came away and I don't think it deserved the low reviews it got. I think it should have got much better reviews. But hey ho, we're the positive ones. Come on. We loved it. It inspired us. And that's what matters. More people enjoy it too.
Well, so far, this side of the pond, very positive reviews. Of course, Jessica Burt is also very positive. We'll find out, hopefully, what Pamela Sue Mann and indeed Kathy Manso make of Xanadu after this. We'll be right back. In Xanadu did Kublai Khan a stately pleasure dome decree, where Alf, the sacred river, ran through caverns measureless to man down to a sunless sea. I wonder if Samuel Taylor Coleridge, when he wrote that an 18th century epic, it wasn't 19th century, when he wrote the epic in the first place, whether he anticipated it being echoed across the ages through Dave D. Dozy, Beaky McIntitch, through Citizen Kane, and of course through Olivia Newton-John, Gene Kelly, and of course Michael Beck. I don't know, but there's a reason we've actually said this is a two-part special. It's not because it's the first of a whole new series of Resonance Rewind, which of course it is, as we've said, Resonance Rewind, the musicals specials. It's also a chance to actually reflect on how people are viewing Xanadu, which, as we said, back in the day, 1980, was fairly mercilessly panned. We've discussed this at length. We've talked about it to the shock of Jessica, to the shock of Victoria Simmons, and also to the shock of Chloe Rose, who we just heard in the first part of this program. But now Pamela Sue Mann is joining with us. Who knows what she's going to do with respect to this? We've got there in the end. Pamela, welcome to our show.
This is a dubious beginning. But you know what? You know, when things go in with an explosion, they tend to fare better over the long run. That's what I say.
This is true. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the movie, which again seems to be settling around about the 8 to 8.5 mark in terms of the gradations and so on. So much to discuss in terms of the line of things that's actually there. I certainly was not, as I've said before, a fan of musicals as such. I've become one over the years. And this one was a wonderful way of actually mixing and matching an awful lot of genres, an awful lot of ways. I mean, it starts off, as we said, we haven't talked about this as yet, but the opening credits where we see the airplane, we see the unidentified flying object, the flying saucer, we see the muses, we see the nine daughters of Zeus, and the nine muses that are actually there. We see that opening line we've just heard in terms of Electric Light Orchestra and I'm Alive. Share with us your own thoughts on this particular text.
Okay, you're going to have to cut me off. I'm telling you that in advance. Because the very reason why I ever even started writing songs or becoming a musical person at all was Olivia Newton-John. I have had a biblical love for her. I don't even know what that means, but I mean, I would say that if I was ever a fan of one person, she was my idol, and she was the reason why I started doing music in the first place. So my memories of Xanadu, if I distill it down to one thing that remained in terms of probably watching it a million times over the years, but not recently at all, and my sort of darker bent over the past recent years, is the one word that remains, and watching it again, is magic. And so one thing that it did not fail to deliver for me, despite all the other things, and there were some cringy moments, I have to say, was the magic. It was the absolute magic. And Olivia Newton-John was magical. And she still is magical. So I have to say, forgiving everything, and there, like I said, there were some really horribly cringy moments, it was an incredible movie. And I will tell you in advance, I'm giving it a 10.
I had a feeling you might, but at the same time, we were looking at a number of key areas within that, and it is hovering around 8.5, 9. Again, this is probably about the 8th or 9th time I've actually seen it. I mean, I saw it once in the cinema back in the day, thought it was enjoyable. Not absolutely mega fantastic, but good, enjoyable, positive from that point of view. Much more enjoyable than Grease, which again I kind of thought was so-so, obviously, which is the major movie which kind of broke Olivia Newton-John as an international star. I mean, she was well known in Australia, obviously she was well known in Britain. She was kind of carving her career as a country music artist before it became Taylor Swift cool to be a country music artist, and arguably the lines within that. And it was obviously before she obviously on the success of Grease, and the challenges of Xanadu then managed to ferry it into a whole career in the 80s with Physical, with a whole variety of other things. But I thought for me, actually, although Olivia was fantastic in it, I think the interplay between Gene Kelly, and this was Gene Kelly's last movie, of course, as a musical. I mean, he did other short things after that. But I kind of began to see, and it's interesting for me that we are now talking in the when Xanadu came out in 1980, that was approximately nigh on 3 decades, a little under 3 decades, about 28 years after Gene Kelly's major hit of Singing in the Rain, and when he really kind of really carved everything. Obviously, American in Paris, Brigadoon, other areas came with respect to the Kelly magic. And there is a moment now where I kind of feel, in reflecting on 40 years, that I can identify with the clarinet playing Danny, the wistful longing almost for magical times gone by, and the way in which obviously he kind of encountered the character of Kira the muse who we gather her name was Terpsichore, but that was stopped before it could be said. And also other areas which I found resonated then, but still connect with me now, is the notion of, one of the characters who we haven't really spoken hugely about. I've plugged him a few times, but that's the character of the manager. And the manager who originally had clearly a passion for art and so on, but kind of whether he sold out, whether he kind of, because he actually does say to Sonny, you know, if you want to actually have the major materials, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, etc. And that's something which maybe actually, you know, it is a case of we're perhaps tilting at windmills in terms of that. Maybe it is a romantic side that suggests that sometimes it's just the creativity that really creates that energy of magic. So James Sloyan as Simpson, one ends up feeling almost sorry for him. And in a sense, his view, I mean, the last time we actually see him is where basically he covers his hand in paint and he rests his hand accidentally on paint and he gets that shot of the green paint there. And I thought that was, well, Michael Beck, of course, also would go on to great success within the Warriors. Again, his approach has been criticized as a bit too wooden here. I know that Jessica thought it was perfectly okay and fine from that point of view. But again, I did feel that, yes, to use the M word, to use that magic, this was something where it's more than the sum of its parts. And if you actually view it as a combination, because you've got the music by Electric Light Orchestra, you've got, obviously, Olivia Newton-John's John Farrar music as well, I think it somehow works and it does connect, which ultimately I think is part and parcel of the whole thing. And I finally actually did, as the show has proceeded and over the two-parter, I have to give a nod in the direction of Coral Brown, of course, who was the companion to Wilfred Hyde White's Zeus. And again, that very important and significant notion about the illusion of time. You know, is it a moment? Is it a millennia? You know, there are lots of things about it to appreciate, to really begin to start saying, OK, it does begin to express this whole notion. I mean, the classic line about, well, after Kira's song Suspended in Time, we have that, maybe just one moment, darling. Well, maybe just one moment or forever. I keep getting them mixed up, too. So again, that sense that ultimately things will work out, but you have to have faith in the magic.
Well, absolutely. And the interesting thing is that, of course, anything Olivia, as I said, I loved, even if it was like, I just turned off the critic and loved that. But the interesting thing is that word we've used before on Resonance Rewind of suspended disbelief. If you turn that off, because it's a big, fat, brightly colored switch that you must turn off in this movie, if you turn it off, then it does give you that hope and that magic and that joy and the possibility and the nostalgia and the romance and basically the message that you have to believe. You have to believe we are magic. Mm. And honestly, you know, Alex, you know, You said everything there is that needs to be said very beautifully. But the one thing that I would say from the perspective of a creative person who's made my life one creative thing after another is that it's absolutely true. I do believe in magic. There is magic. And that magic is the sense of having that inspiration, that muse, what you will, believing it, don't letting the critic shut it off. And it's a testament for life too, because in life, when people shut that idea off that they can create things and manifest things and bring that magic into their life, and therefore, as a creative artist, making magic for other people that they can enjoy. But if they shut that switch off and they don't do that, then they end up having sad lives and not inspiring others. That's the big part of it. So the seed of what is there is actually brilliant, that concept.
a slight health and safety issue I had, which I think I can mention now. Big Al, the truck driver, when he allows Sonny to actually hang on to his truck, literally by hanging onto the tailgate whilst on roller skates, it's not a good sign. I wouldn't endorse it. I wouldn't sort of recommend it in any way, shape, or form. It could create major problems.
Kind of the times.
But again, obviously, this is Venice Beach. This is Los Angeles. This is Hollywood, the land of dreams, the notions with respect to that. Looking at some of the harsh views that had been made, I mean, again, we've used this time before, the most pithy of which is Xanadu. No, Xanadont, in terms of going to see the whole thing. Do you think that we look at it now with more fondness? I mean, let's go to a specific. Did you have any favourite musical numbers? I mean, were you more of a fan of the Electric Light Orchestra numbers, the All Over the Worlds, obviously the joint Xanadu number, or was it more a case of Suspended in Time or whatever?
Okay, so, you know, whenever you're away from me, you know that song with Gene Kelly? That was absolutely charming. I love that song. I could say it might be my favorite, but again, I hold this very almost creepy, bizarre reverence for Olivia. And I did meet her once, but in a very bizarre way. She can do no wrong. Her voice, her songs, the songs that were written for her, because she didn't write those songs. I think Suddenly. I mean, I knew every inflection of that song in the moment, exactly how she's going to do the grace note, where it comes in, that her honey sweet voice. And again, Suddenly, like, it's just about possibility. It's so positive and lovely. And going back without being too redundant, when I first started watching it again after all those years, I was cringing a lot. I really had to get through that. Oh God, did she say that? Did they do that? And that actor, her partner, was he went to Central School. I mean, he was no slouch. He was a serious, serious actor, or still is. But that beautiful, positive, magic, hopefulness, charm that Olivia just was born with and cultivated and shared with the world. That took you. So the song Suddenly was this beautiful love song. The way she sang it couldn't have been more perfect. So it, to me, it's between Suddenly, Whenever You're Away From Me, whatever that song was called, and then also You Have to Believe We Were Magic, because that was just Olivia at her best.
See, again, from my own point of view, I've got to say I did quite like The Fall, even though, again, I would say no matter how much you might be tempted to actually cycle into
it.
Yeah, into the whole thing. And of course, Don't Walk Away, which leads into the animated sequence of the film, which again, I think Don Bluth very much sort of looking through that. And again, I thought some of those things were bold statements. They were statements that had been made in other movies, the interaction between the other worlds, other dimensions, how we connect together and so on. But again, it tended to work. So I think generally I could go along with the way in which the whole thing was developed, although I was never a roller skater and probably never will be, actually. It's just,
I'm going to take it up again because of that movie. I'm going to take it up again, but not the rollerblading. Rollerblading, I think, is treacherous, but roller skating, it was such a thing. And it wasn't just the roller skating. It was the outfit, the costume that you wore whilst roller skating and the posture that you assumed whilst you were, I mean, you know, look, I wanted nothing more than to grow up in Hollywood in California, you know, probably in part because of that movie. You know, they just, there's some kind of magic that they captured of the LA dream, if you will. And I have to thank you, Alex, personally, for suggesting this film, because sometimes you just have to go back to what you loved and what was good and what was positive and what was happy. That movie, oh my goodness. Can you imagine if that came out today? I mean, it might either be a cult classic or it might just be so cringeworthy that nobody would, like, it would be so, I mean, like you're saying, it got universally panned or so, but I never knew that. It was out in the theaters. I thought it made a lot of money. I don't even know how much it cost to make. It must have been a lot, but I know I'm a bit all over the place with it, but I'm really glad it was made when it was.
I mean, certainly the Residents Rewind team seem to have given a full two thumbs up on the sequence. And I think, you know, time has tended to be a little bit more kind in terms of the sort of sequence. But again, I cite one that we use in part one of this, one review. A word of advice to any movie producer: if you have a big budgeted production that you hope will become a hit, don't hire a director whose only previous experience is on TV. The camera either stays still or moves slowly and gracefully when they should have flung it around and experimented with camera angles. The only department that really tried here was the art department that created the arty scene shifts with the accompanying sound effects and the neon-coloured special effects flashing around Kira and the other muses. Don Bluth also provided an animated sequence that offers the only magical movie in the movement, the only magical moment in the whole film. Makes you wish the whole movie had been made in the same style. And many more, as I say, from IMDb, very much in that vein, where, again, it's something where one tends to think, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And again, he actually complies with the notion, this particular reviewer, a guilty pleasure of the highest magnitude. After all, I'm a nostalgia freak.
I have a question for you. So the one scene that you mentioned that is the, what was, they said that it should be, the entire movie should be that way. What scene was it they were talking about?
The sequence basically when Kira and Sunny actually become animated and go and dive into the whole thing with of course the line "Don't walk away."
I don't think that it would have worked for an entire movie. I don't. It needed that. It needed. It just, you know, we should just leave it as it is. You know,
exactly.
Dust it off the shelf. You know, bow to it. It was made. And you know what? Fair play. It was made. It was a crazy thing. Going back and watching it, it seemed like a drug trip. It was crazy. The things that they packed into this film were just insane. But Olivia carries it. She could carry anything. And she carried this film.
I think it was helped in no small part by the relationship with Gene Kelly, who, again, I think produced an effortless line of things within that. And progress onwards. So let's talk about favourite characters then. Which ones, or one other than Kira, or assuming that's going to be up there, would be up for you in terms of, this was somebody I'd like to give a full mention to?
Okay, here goes. If I'm not allowed to choose Kira, because you know I would choose her.
You must share with us, how did you meet Olivia Newton-John herself then? What was the scenario?
It was terribly embarrassing, but I'm gonna go to my favorite character, and then I will tell you, I promise. So if I don't get to choose Olivia, I will absolutely choose Gene Kelly, absolutely, without a doubt. And I will go further to say, the dance scene that they did, I studied dancing, and in a torturous way, like ballet, pointe shoes, tap, jazz, the whole thing. It's not easy. And it's not easy to make it look effortless, especially tap. And Gene Kelly, right? You know, Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, you don't get much higher in terms of tap dancing in film. And it's a very balletic kind of tap dancing. Olivia frickin' held her own with Gene Kelly and made it look effortless. Now, I know that the choreography was simple. It was made more simple because she's not, you know, she's not Ginger Rogers. However, she did it. She kept up with Gene Kelly and she made it look effortless. And the two of them together, you're right. I wish someone could have made a movie with the two of them as the main characters in the movie. So yes, now I'll tell you how I met her. It was not the way I wanted to meet her. And in fact, I think I might even write a letter to her daughter, because sometimes people out of shyness never reach out to their idols. And I never did. I never wrote her one fan letter. And I'm ashamed of myself. But a very dear friend of mine, who's a brilliant songwriter from Australia and from the Kernaghan family, Fiona Kernaghan, came over to America with Warner Chappell. She came over to do some writing. And she was my roommate. She became my roommate in New York. And I went out to Nashville, which she would lovingly call Nash Vegas. And we went to CMJ. We were performing. We were all independent singer-songwriters performing our music at CMJ. Well, Fiona's family knew Olivia Newton-John, and her brother, Lee, Fiona's brother, Lee Kennigan, I believe he sang with her. He brought her into an album he was doing or something. They worked together. So somehow Fiona knew that Olivia was at this particular CMJ that we were performing in. Somehow we found her tour bus. It's all a blur to me. I don't even know how this happened, but we found her tour bus, three independent singer-songwriters, me with my little cassette tape that Jerry had produced, my first demo, and I think I wrote her a letter. I think I actually wrote her a letter, but I can't remember what it said. Now, this was my idol, my one absolute idol in life. But by the time we got over to her tour bus, she had a minder with her, which is pretty standard, looking after her and protecting her from crazy independent singer-songwriters, which we were. So I don't know if there isn't even a doorbell on the tour bus, but somehow we knocked on the tour bus or something, and the door opened, and she was still on the steps inside with her minder. And three young singer-songwriters in full force are all basically screaming how much they love her and have different things to say. And the combination of the three were so hysterical, because when I transcribed what it said, she probably thought that we were going to attack her. And not simply
echoing the three Beverly Sisters, Andrew Sisters characters from the Battle of the Bands in the Fee Waybill Tubes aspect of Xanadu there.
But you're maybe so. You know what, Alex? To this day, I look at my life as a comedy. It's a comedy. And maybe I didn't want it to be a comedy, but I think that when I look back on all these important moments in my life, they end up being comedies. And so at least there was joy and comedy in our meeting. But she did have my cassette tape. She did hopefully read my letter and not think I was too much of a psychopath. But it was not the way I wanted to meet her. Oh, well.
It's all part and parcel of the way in which the universe manifests its own unique things, as we see, however we can connect. As I say, there was that piquant moment at the end of the narrative where, as we talked with Chloe in the first part of this particular edition, you're never quite sure, really, whether the character of Sonny actually kind of recognizes, he sort of recognizes that he's met before, but we're not quite sure whether she actually is the reincarnation of Kira or whether she's simply, because after they've done that big musical extravaganza, there's the moment where effectively the opening night has been a success. Things have sort of effectively wound down. And you have that time. I mean, I don't know. I think most folk find this. I know I've certainly found it at the end of a show, at the end of a particular piece, where you have a quiet time where it's not quite melancholy, although it is. And it's not. It's something where you're reflective in terms of, well, is that it? Where do we go from now? What's the next stage here? Like every time we finish off a Resonance Rewind, perhaps. But in terms of that sequence, I thought it was quite nicely handled. And again, the way in which they kind of start talking. And so we're led to believe the audience that they maybe do get together. But of course, we never quite know for sure whether that's what the gods have in mind, or whether it's a case of, well, it could just be another form of magic working or not.
Well, absolutely. I did have a moment where I was thinking, all right, so 2 months later, she's coming back from the store with the milk, they're, trying to find jobs. The club maybe doesn't do so well. I don't, it's to put it into the realistic realm, my mind did go there and try and figure out, well, what would life be like for a Greek muse with magical powers to
as a waitress in a cocktail bar.
Exactly. So again, once again, suspended disbelief. We must just assume that absolutely they're together, but maybe they're together in another Bardot or another realm or somewhere magical. Maybe they've moved to Hawaii and, he sells his share of the business, or, who knows what might happen. I hate to think that it became like an Elvis situation where, maybe Olivia was forced to to perform at that club, and she had a contract where she couldn't go anywhere else, and she started taking drugs and being really unhappy. You know, we don't want to go
to the dark side, Pamela. I think we need to step away from that one. So it's fine. No, okay. So you've already revealed this, but we'll just stick with it. Is you are the last person on this special, so far only two-parter that we've actually done as far as Residence Rewind is concerned. I don't know. I think we had one back in the day over a Doctor Who episode. What is your score for Xanadu?
Well, I've changed it from 10, and I know that I gave something else an 11, and I can't remember what that was. Oh, it was probably the Doctor Who episode. So, it'd be unfair if I gave this more than that, because that was very magic, and I loved those episodes. So I'm going to have to give this one, I think, an 11.25. Sorry, Graham. I think Olivia wins.
And I'm sure Graham Harper would take that on the chin. Next up, as far as Residence Rewind musical specials are concerned, as we mentioned at the end of the first part, we'll be again exploring the afterlife, but in a different form, with, of course, Shirley Jones in the lead role. And the episode is going to be Carousel. Until then, to Pamela Sue Mann and to Chloe Rose, keep on resonating.
Yeah.